This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao in for Frank Stacio. Imagine a taxidermy animal. Whether it's in a museum or a man cave, stuffed animals can evoke a lot of strong feelings. Pride, disgust, or maybe curiosity. Aaron Durham is an Asheville-based filmmaker who argues that this practice is misunderstood. Taxidermists are more artists than mortician, and they've actually played a big role in environmental conservation. The documentary Stuffed follows young taxidermists who are pushing the limits of a misunderstood subculture. It premiered earlier this year at South by Southwest, and it's now touring festivals across the country. Erin Durham is the director, and she joins us from partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on the documentary. It's beautiful. It's visually stunning, which is, I think, one of the things that surprised me most. I was expecting a lot of browns and blacks.
Yeah.
And, you know, images of stuffed boar's head and antlers, but that's really the opposite of what I saw. So maybe start by kind of debunking one of the biggest myths we may have about taxidermy, which is that it's all kind of stuffed deer heads and antler heads and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I thought in the beginning when we first decided to do, me and Rachel Price decided to do this documentary. We just wanted to do an environmental documentary, something that got people excited about nature. And she suggested taxidermy, and I was really disgusted because, just like you said, I thought of deer heads on the wall, I thought of hunting, I thought of dark gray images. And as soon as I spent a weekend researching, I saw an art form. I saw a lot of history. I saw a lot of passion about nature just in one book. And I thought, if this book can capture my attention, a vegan, hardcore animal rights activist, then maybe there's something to this and definitely worth telling a story about visually. But it was hard explaining to people what it was going to be about because, just like you said, they expected that I was going to make this really gory, dark movie. And I said, no, like, what's in my head is this beautiful, bright, vibrant art piece. And it really took us starting to film before anybody would sign on to work on it with me.
So you spent 2 years in 6 countries. You profile a range of people. And I want to get into one of those stories now, one of the taxidermists that you look at in your film. And they're talking about kind of the challenges of being a taxidermist out in the real world. Let's listen to a clip. And here is Jordan Hackle.
I go into a bar and try and pick up a girl, and then you tell them you're a taxidermist. You get some weird reactions. You get anything from "you do taxes" to "that's really creepy," or you get the ones that lie and are like, "no, it's not creepy at all." And then in the back of their mind, they're like, "this guy could be Ted Bundy."
That was a clip from the documentary Stuffed, which premiered at South by Southwest this year. We're joined by director Erin Durham. So tell me about what taxidermists actually do. It's not taxes. Talk us through the taxidermy process as you lay it out in the film.
So it starts with an animal, a deceased animal. Usually has to go into the taxidermy process very, very quickly. Museums and other scientific facilities will preserve those animals sometimes for, you know, decades if they can't get to taxiderming them early. But it's essentially a process to preserve an animal. Sometimes, yes, it's for a trophy hunt, but way more often than that, it's for science, it's for a nature center, it's for a museum. These animals were in captivity. A lot of people that I was originally talking to thought that this was about, you know, pets or trophy animals, and that's just so far from the case. A lot of these animals are animals that are going extinct, and they are being protected by government policies and incredible people at nature preserves. And unfortunately, over time, these animals do go extinct, and they need to be documented in some way. So all of those scientific measurements are taken, and then they're taxidermied. So someone like you or I can go and see what that animal used to look like, where it used to live, what it used to eat, everything. It's so much more than just the animal. It's about the environment, which is the importance behind taxidermy. It connects you back to nature and shows you these, I think Travis says it best, that it's like a little time capsule. Like, you get to see what an animal in Africa or an elephant in Africa looked like 150 years ago, because a lot of these habitats, because of us, are disappearing.
And there's so much precision to this work, which really struck me. They're measuring kind of the exact distance between two sides of a mouth to replicate that properly, or they're measuring the exact depth of the veins of a fish to make sure that's accurately portrayed. Can you talk about the deep science and anatomical work that a lot of these taxidermists are doing?
I mean, it's incredible. I was a bio major for 2 years, so I arrogantly thought that I knew enough to understand what they were doing, and I was just so humbled watching them work. And I mean, some of these people have zoology degrees, they have bio PhDs. Some of them are completely self-taught, but they all have to have a serious academic understanding of anatomy, biology, and chemistry for them to do this work. There are some taxidermists that don't know this stuff, and they can buy a form online and just kind of play around and work on their piece. But the people we filmed, these are the people kind of at the top level that are trying to take taxidermy to the next level and trying to use this art form both, you know, to continue the art, but also to continue scientific research, and most importantly, to bring people back to understanding nature and appreciating it more.
So you chose to follow taxidermists with pretty strict morals, a very particular code of ethics around how they do this work. And I want to hear from Daniel, who's one of the taxidermists that you profile, about some of his first experiences with dead animals that go all the way back to when he was a kid. So let's take a listen.
I'd get on my bike and I would ride around town and look for roadkill. And I still have a vivid memory. I'm like 6, 7 years old. And I remember being kind of embarrassed about it. So I'd make sure, like, I would wait sometimes half an hour. Like, I'd just ride back and forth down the street till there were no cars around. Like, I didn't want any witnesses. And as soon as there was a break in traffic, I'd like jump off my bike, like put some gloves on, throw this thing in a bag, and then ride to the woods somewhere, bury it, and just like put a rock there and come back, you know, a couple months later and dig it up, clean all the bones.
That was a clip from the documentary Stuffed. We're talking with its director, Aaron Durham. What an amazing image of this little kid just biking around and collecting roadkill. But I was surprised to know that roadkill is actually a big source for a lot of these taxidermists. Can you talk about the use of roadkill and then how that plays out throughout the taxidermy process?
Well, for Daniel, roadkill was his way of experimenting. He talks in another clip about, you know, just seeing animals taxidermied for the first time when he was even younger, and he cried, and he wished they were alive. And that is a story I heard in almost every single taxidermist in every single country we interviewed. They have this very visceral memory of seeing an animal on the side of the road dead, or seeing a bird run into their wall and die, and they just had a hard time. They had a hard time coping with that death and wanting to find a way to bring that animal back to life. So Daniel, he's like the sweetest human being on the planet. That he transitioned very quickly from roadkill, which he was just basically learning their anatomy and learning how to clean bones, things like that, to now, obviously, he's doing much bigger things. There's another woman in the film that uses exclusively roadkill. She's not one of our main artists, but her reasoning behind it is that she sees it as a form of like crossing over. Like that was just her. She doesn't believe in using any animals that were, in her words, unethically sourced, hunted, or anything like that. So she takes animals that were hit by cars and taxidermies them. And nature centers do that quite a bit too. Like there's a mountain lion, on a more serious example, there's a mountain lion in LA that was hit on the highway. And one of the nature centers in Los Angeles decided to use that mountain lion to teach kids about disappearing habitats, which is a very real thing that's happening in our world, all over the world right now. And kids have a hard time understanding what that means, but if they show what the forest looked like before us and what it looks like now, there's a huge highway going in between. Well, an adolescent mountain lion is going to have a hard time understanding he can't cross that road to get food. So it's just a very like tactile, educational way to connect people back to nature.
And it has a long history. You talk in the film about a man named Carl Akeley, who I guess is kind of the OG taxidermist, who had these, went on these elaborate trips, and he would hire hundreds of people to go out with him and to kind of observe and collect information. Tell us a bit of his story and how he set up this field that really does a lot of conservation work.
Yeah, so he wasn't the first taxidermist. It was an art form in every museum at the time that he was growing up, but he just noticed how warped the animals look compared to how he would see them live. So they're all inventors. All of the people we filmed are inventing new science as they go, and he was the first of that. He decided to sculpt what's underneath the skin rather than, you know, do the patchwork that they did before. So he came up with the sculpting and having to have this, this other form of art behind all of the science. In addition to that, when he was doing these safari trips that were funded by the museums, the American Museum of Natural History was where he was getting most of his work, but Smithsonian was funding him. All the major museums were funding because they needed specimens for research. This was way before or right before cameras and other forms of documenting wildlife. So that was, you know, back 120 years ago, where if you wanted to document an animal, you had to hunt it and preserve it that way. Things are obviously very different now. But back then, he always kind of had a hard time with hunting. He didn't really feel comfortable hunting himself. But there was this moment where he was hunting a mountain gorilla, which was a really rare animal even then, and he killed a mountain gorilla, and it completely just wrecked him and changed the way he saw hunting, and he saw his responsibility in the scientific community. And he convinced the Belgian government to start the very first national park in Africa. I mean, he spent, I think, 10 years lobbying to get this land preserved. And the conservationists, they attribute him to mountain gorillas still being alive today and not extinct.
So there are a lot of examples that you look at, some people who are hunting and then they're taxidermists who use those animals, or some people who are upcycling and they will eat the meat and then do things with the rest of the body. But then there are some people who I guess are falling into this field called rogue taxidermy. Let's listen to a quick clip from Serena Brewer and then talk a bit more about rogue taxidermy. Let's listen.
Capricorn is constructed out of a stillborn lamb, a carp, and grouse wings, and then the antlers on that are from a vintage roe deer trophy plaque. A lot of people, when I first started doing this, didn't think that what I was doing was acceptable whatsoever. Not ethical, not moral. I never understood why I would get just like lambasted, attacked, just like horrible hate mail, whereas men that were doing it, no hate mail. Taxidermy is really rapidly losing that good old boys club feeling that it had for so many years.
That's a clip from the documentary Stuffed. We're talking with its director, Erin Durham. She joins us from BPR in Asheville. So a couple of things to unpack in that clip, but start first with telling us about rogue taxidermy and what that is.
So rogue taxidermy is using animal products to create art. It's not those examples like the squirrels that have what are they called? Like boxing gloves on, and they're in like a boxing ring. That's
or like
rogue
at
taxidermy.
Bunnies at a tea party. I feel like that's one of the.
Yes, that's one of them. I saw this one in Vancouver where it was a mouse. Like he had a jacket on, and he was stretching the jacket open, and you could see a Superman logo underneath. Like that's rogue. It's kind of like pop surrealist art, taxidermy. And she's the one that uses a bunch of different pieces of either roadkill or vintage plaques that she finds in stores where she lives, and just creates pieces with those. And they're really fascinating. We had already finished filming and we stopped to go and capture her story because it's just so different from everybody else in the movie.
There are only one, I think, taxidermists that are employed in a museum in the U.S. anymore, or that's kind of what you conclude toward the end of your film. Museums are phasing this out. What's ahead for this field? What are kind of the brewing changes right now?
I think it's coming back. The reason we started the film and the reason it was this book was written, Kingdom Under Glass, by Jay Kirk, who's a creative writing professor at UPenn. And it's just such an incredible, incredible book that really changed my opinion on taxidermy. So that was written, I think, over a decade ago. And then another, thing that got me interested in it was on the cover of LA Weekly. Serena's Rogue Taxidermy was on the cover of the New York Times art section. It's all coming back into mainstream media as almost this like epiphany, like, oh, what's this thing? We haven't talked about this in like 100 years. Like, so I think it's coming back. I mean, we're starting to see for example, the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles, where we filmed a lot of this, they have Tim Bovard, who's the last full-time taxidermist, staffed there, and they have some of the most incredible hauls you've ever seen. They are doing a premiere next week for Stuffed, and it's all promoting and going back to the museum to help hopefully raise money and awareness about taxidermy, get people interested in it again. But they are already 100% on board with taxidermy being one of the most valuable tools to teach people about nature.
So we've talked about the art, the science, the conservation, but there's a lot of death, and that's kind of strung through this documentary, how they feel about these animals, and a lot of the people that you profile have a really deep connection with many of the animals that they're working with. For you as a filmmaker, how did doing this documentary change how you think about death?
That's honestly one of the most beautiful gifts I've ever gotten from making a film. I used to deal with a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, and around the exact same summer I started working on this project, I also started backpacking and putting myself in semi-dangerous situations, and I was terrified the whole time that I was going to get hurt. And what the taxidermists really instill in you just by doing their work is that death is just as much a part of life as birth is, and that it shouldn't be feared, and it's not a scary thing. Yes, it's sad when someone you love isn't here anymore. That's a given. But death in and of itself shouldn't be something that you're scared of. And it just completely removed this kind of deep-set anxiety that I've had my whole life about getting hurt. And now I backpack and climb mountains and do things that I never would have done.
That's amazing. Well, I encourage everyone to go check out the film Stuffed by Erin Durham. She is an Asheville-based director, and she joined us from BPR in Asheville. She's also the founder of History Boutique Film. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Just ahead, the music of Dissimilar South. They'll be with us here in studio. Stay with us on The State of Things.
Sometimes